Winifred Sanford, Reel 3.
During the early months of the war, I was working at the office of the Socialist and Communist Parties in Barcelona, and one of my jobs was to broadcast to America at midnight. I gathered my information about the war wherever I could, reading Spanish and Catalan newspapers, asking for interviews with trade union leaders, and meeting men who had come from the front. One day, two British ambulance drivers came in. They had just come from the south coast out of Malaga, bringing refugees and leaving them in villages on the way. The following is from what they told me when I interviewed them for a broadcast at the radio station in Barcelona, and much of it I learned from my own experience. I made an early start along the Valencia coast, thinking that the winding hilly road would be less crowded before dawn. I switched out the car lights and turned the window down, letting in the cool morning air. The sun was rising over the sea, round a bend and up again, as though you would sail from the cliffhead into the sea. Piercing golden rods of light came across the Mediterranean. Soon sky and sea would change from liquid grey to the mingled blues of amethyst and turquoise. Dawn to the city worker is not like this, I thought, a poem set in blue and gold. Gold. Ah, there are the orange groves. I had bought oranges a penny apiece in the city, selecting them from the pile man high on the market floor. And here they were on the trees, thousands of golden oranges. I peered into a warehouse where women were sitting on the floor rolling them in paper. Thousands and thousands of golden oranges. I pulled to the side of the road and went into the groves. Oranges on the ground, oranges all around me. I put some into the back of the car, making a dozen journeys from the grove to the road with hands full, jumping the ditch each time. The comrades in the city would be happy to see them. Blue and green of the Valencia coast. The 15th century painters had caught it. Back in the city, men feasted themselves in the picture galleries on the blue and gold of the Mediterranean. The old painters put the blue into the robes of the Madonna and gold into her crown. They surrounded the Mother of God with the sky and the orange groves. Now, this is where I turn off. I have a package to go to the committee at the Union Hall in Isla Roca. Down to the sea I went. It is not quite an island. I crossed to a little fishing town by a causeway. The guard stopped me. I showed him the package I had brought. Salud, he said, and turned away, looking out to sea. I found the secretary. The man took the package, and I detected a caressing movement of his hand as he slid it over the books. I have something to go back to the anti-fascist committee in Barcelona, he said. Will you wait while I prepare it? Si, si, of course I will. I had to go to the Sindicato Hall to see some of the women. They were using it for a needlework group. They had a sewing machine, and Juliana was cutting out. They hoped to begin work at once, making clothes for the refugees. Well, I'll come back for your package, I said. In half an hour, compañera. I strolled out into the blazing light and turned through the street to the great castle at the sea's edge. Its walls and turrets were in good preservation, quite a fortress in the days of the blue and gold paintings. But I was not in the mood for castles. I couldn't take my eyes off the brilliant sea. Out there was Mallorca. the island of dancing lambs, almond blossom, simple shepherd folk, and Italian aviation. I never knew when the black specks would come out of the sky and become black bombers. I trod carefully down the steps off the castle wall and made my way to the church, standing like a ship's prow on a splay of land out in the sea and furthest into the water in that sea-bound village. The church looked worn and shabby, 18th century, I judged by the architecture. A few tired old people sat in the sun by the wall. It was quiet. To the left of the church was a patch of ground overgrown with weeds. The wall around it was low, and the drop over it was directly into the sea. I stood in the patch of sunlight in front of the church. I took a few steps forward. The eyes of the old people were on me. It was hard to walk across an open space in the sunlight, alone. The space seemed vast. I hesitated. There was the background to my picture of the Madonna and Child, the castle, the church, the donkey on the weed patch, and the infinite sea. I must go forward into this vastness, forward to the great doors of the church. Just a few minutes' rest in the church, I thought, and then I'll go back to the house of the secretary. I was in the shade of the porch. Inside, my eyes were growing accustomed to the dim light. Christ, what have they done? What have they done to the church? The images in the side chapels. Yes, they're there. But where are their blue robes and golden crowns? The Madonna with her child, did she look like that? The saints with their venerable beards. Yes, they're still there. How dirty they look. The altar. Yes, I can see the old stone altar. But what has happened to the silver vessels and the embroidered cloth that the daughters of Mary made? Locked in the big chest in the town hall, woman, I said to myself. But there are cooking pots on the altar. Do the Madonna and Child want broth and beans cooked in an olla? But the saints and the Madonna, why do they look so ill? The Mother of God had a blue robe and a red cloak and a fine lace snood, and here she is in a ragged striped petticoat and a dirty black shawl. But the breasts of the Mother of God are plump and pink. I've seen them in the old pictures. Yours are shrunken and grey-white. And look at the Christ child. Father in heaven, why did they do that to him? Look at his bony little arms and his big black eyes. He's starving. Madonna there in the black shawl, can't you see? You're spoiling the picture. Is that St. Peter in the niche? I heard him say something about sharing a little sardine fish with young Francisco. Peter's lost his key. Where? Oh, on the road. You understand, compañera, the road between the sea and the hills winding down to Almeria. He had spoken. Yes, yes. And look at that one. Apostles ought to wear long gowns. Look at his clothes. His tight knee breeches tied with ribbons. Red stockings, black sash with fringes. Blue and white striped shirt and a little hat. But the apostles have halos in silver, not those ridiculous little hats. And look at that one with a huge straw hat on top of it. You'd think he was going to work in the fields under the brutal sun. Look there to the right of the altar. Straw and the Christ child. But they spread a beautiful shawl for him to lie on, not those dirty rags. There were cattle in the stable where the Son of God lay. Why did you put a starved goat there? You've got the picture all wrong. Mary, I heard them say, he's a comrade to talk to you. Mary lifted herself off the straw and smiled. The child was born on the road, she said to me. It's a miracle he's alive. A miracle. And Jesus made folk happy with his miracles. And this, misery, poverty and suffering. Oh, God, what's the matter with their faces? They're so haggard and frightened. In the old picture, they have such complacent faces. Nothing worries them. They're so clean and pleasant. They move. They're living. The waxen plaster images have shed their glory and come to life. I'm not sure. Is it life or death I'm looking at? A church crowded with living saints and cooking saucepans on the altar. We did not do this. We are the Republic. We took care of the beautiful things in the church. Who did it? I'm Luciana, and she's Marta, a woman was saying. I was moving between them, out into the sunlight. Don't, Tomas, said Marta, as a boy dragged at her skirt. Her hair was lank and straight, like the hair of a woman who's been ill. She took Tomas up in her arms. Jesus, Jesus, come here, called a shrill-voiced old woman to a straying toddler. Stay inside the church wall. You must not go out into the village. They were not mocking. The name of the Christ child is common in Spain. I wandered onto the weed patch and stood looking towards Italy. A dozen or more women and children came round to talk to the compañero forestiera from the city to pour out their tale. We came from Malaga, said Luciana, along the road by the sea. The fascists marched into our city, you know, said an old man. Sisi, I know. They took our city and we were in flight. 150,000 of us, went on Marta. All along the road to Almeria the people walked, 5, 6, and 7 days without food. We could not rest, broke in old Peter. A few hours, perhaps, but the nights were cold and damp. Our clothes became sodden in the mist. We put Mary on the donkey, said Luciana. She gave birth by the roadside on the third day. Mercifully, an ambulance came along and took her. Marta took up the story. They died of exposure and fear. An endless procession in worn-out shoes, bleeding feet, swathed in rags too heavy to lift and drag. All ages, mothers with children at their breasts, old men crawling on hands and knees, children toddling, clutching precious household possessions. Imagine it, comrade, the road littered with abandoned pots and mattresses and broken carts and dying animals. And the noise was the wail of suffering, said another woman. Ay, they wailed. Ay. Ay, echoed two little girls. Ay. They're coming. Oh, God, I can go no faster. That's how it was, said Marta, all along the road between the Sierra and the sea. We were so hungry. In the dark, little ones fell beneath the animals, and you'd hear their fathers cry, Look out, Chico! Cuidado! Ay me, but he's dead. Dead. And the wail of ay, ay, went on. We passed a lame man trying to carry a sick boy. We threw away the last of our things and put him on the mule. The poor beast was hungry too. We thought we could rest in Almeria, and the government would send trucks and ambulances to carry us away. Oh, it was worthwhile to struggle with that hope ahead. At last we reached Almeria. We filled the town, packed close in the square. Their voices were eager, and they began to speak together, as if fearing to miss this opportunity to ease their hearts in an outpour of agony. And then, out of God's blue sky, there came a German plane There came an aeroplane. Comrade, escuche, listen. It dropped 8 bombs in our midst. There was a sudden silence as Marta said that. They were all crying, men and women crying, and little children crying. 8 bombs, said a lad with big black eyes and sunken cheeks. Then other planes came and flew along the road and machine gunned us. We stuffed our ears to keep out the shrieks of the dying. My neighbour was riding a donkey, her husband walking beside her, like an old picture we had at home in the kitchen. And they shot the child out of her arms. She slipped from the ass and went and ran over the cliffs into the sea. 150,000 of us, said old Peter again, innocent people from Malaga and all the villages along that lovely coast, mowed down by aeroplanes. Innocent people. And then Marta began again. They were quiet, quietly weeping. Out at sea, we saw an Italian ship. It came in. Aye, moaned an old woman. Shh, let Marta speak, said a young mother. Then it fired shells into us, shells from the sea. I could not speak. They stood around me, a group of dishevelled humans, dirty, tired faces, the imprint of agony in their eyes. They, who had once been women with homes they were proud of, respectable families, brought to this. I moved slowly back into the church. Refugees in the church, sheltering after the fascist massacre. I spoke to Mary on the straw in the corner. They're going to find me a place in the village tomorrow, she said, with that sweet, patient smile of hers. The village has taken in so many. It was full when we got here. The ambulance brought me as far as this, but it had to go back to Almeria. There are so many more, you know, worse off than I. I have my baby. Yes, you have a beautiful baby. I'm so glad he was not born in fascist territory, Mary said. He will be brought up a republican and go to school and learn about justice and the way to peace. My baby. What are you going to call him? I asked. Jesus del Camino, she said simply. Jesus of the road. I gazed at her. She could find something to be grateful for. Her home gone, her husband dead, nothing but a bed of straw, a few rags, and a thin black goat. She saw me looking at the animal. She followed us all the way, Mary said. I don't know why, funny little beast. We used to have a flock of them. The others were out on the hills with my little brother. They're all lost, all lost. I stood by the altar, helpless. Salud, and may it go well with you. I took Marta's hand and Luciana's. I walked across the light patch towards the village. This time I was not alone. It was a little easier to get past the eyes of the old men and women by the wall. The woman with the shrunken breasts and weary face was waiting to say salud to me. Salud, compañero. Before I turned the corner, I looked back. The castle, the church, the rocks, the donkey and the infinite sea. Over there the vineyards and the olive groves, the Madonna with her child. The picture was there again. 937 years ago, they crucified the Christ child, who walked in the blue and gold villages of the Mediterranean. They bided their time. This year, they crucified the Mother of God, too. It happened at Wete, the grand staircase. Josepha lived in a cave house. She was Magdalena's daughter. She was being taught to be a nurse at the hospital. Magdalena had wished that her daughter had had more schooling, but there was always so much to do, and no one objected when Josepha, at 12, was taken from school while she could still not spell and had only read a few easy religious books. A bonny young woman Josepha was. Ever since the first days of the war, she had blossomed like a flower. She kept herself nice, too, always washing her white socks and overalls, and then brushing her well-set hair, putting a little oil on it when she could get it, she would fasten a bunch of yellow crocuses over one ear, crocuses picked on the hillside above the cave. In my day, thought Magdalena, a woman wore black and tied a kerchief on her head, and going without stockings. Oh, Madre mia Santissima! Magdalena was proud of Josepha, but she was proud of her 10-year-old daughter, too. Only last week, Josepha had brought home some foreign nurses from the hospital to show them the cave where she lived. After Magdalena had shown them the rooms that her father had carved out of the rock and the new improvements, the electric light fixed across the low earth ceiling, she asked them to sit in the living room while she handed them glasses of fresh water. She had sighed because there was no wine, but they understood the war. Then she thought to herself, should she or should she not show them? She went to the cupboard built in the earth across one corner of the room and pulled out some sheets of white paper. Look, she exclaimed proudly, my little girl's drawings. She did them at school. Her visitors admired the childish efforts. Do you see, went on Magdalena, they have coloured crayons now. That's since this government came in. It's the first time the children in this village have had coloured crayons. One morning, Magdalena swept up the wood ash on the open hearth and took down a pitcher from a niche in the wall. Placing a twisted rag on her head, she raised the pitcher. Erect in her heelless shoes, she descended the hill to the fountain. Then she walked up the hill with the pitcher of water on her head, as she had done these 40 years. Josepha had not come home all night. When she toiled up the hill in the morning, she was tired out. Mother, there's a big offensive on, she said. We had 100 wounded in last evening. We've opened a new ward. We've been working all night. Ay de me, sighed Magdalena. Mother, don't let me sleep more than 2 hours. I've got to go back. Magdalena stirred the garbanzos, thinking. And when her daughter got up, she said, Josepha, do you think they would employ me at the hospital? You, Mother? Yes. Well, you could clean the floors, Mother. But would you like to do that? Of course, what else can I do? I haven't had the fine education you talk about in your speeches at the youth meetings, like the children will get when the war's over. But I can wash floors if they'll let me. It would seem like doing something to help them win the war, wouldn't it? Very well, Mother, come and see the director this afternoon. That afternoon, Magdalena took her chair outside the house and sat there. Would the director laugh at her and tell her she was an ignorant old woman? Slowly, she untied her black kerchief and hung it on the back of the chair. Then she took down her long hair and brushed and combed it. Much of it was not turned grey. Only her wrinkled face made her look old, very old. She dragged her hair back. She poured out a little of the precious water and washed her face in the cave kitchen. Should she change her dress? No, no. She'd had that one 15 years. It had been turned twice. The girls nowadays wanted a new dress every year. But she did not begrudge them it. Why shouldn't they? She put on a clean black apron, and then she covered her beautiful hair and her gold earrings with a clean black kerchief, and she stepped out of the cave house into the afternoon sunlight. Below her was the town with its rough unpaved streets, its three shops, its assembly hall, its eight churches and two enormous monasteries. Away to the right gleamed the big square public washing pool. The voices of the women came up through the clear air. It was crowded. There was much linen from the hospital. She stepped down the hill past the other women sitting outside their caves, brushing their hair or doing their needlework, and she came to the great monastery, a huge building with two quadrangles inside it. One of the outer wings had always been the town prison, and was still kept as such. Several persons caught shooting at the people in the first days of the war, and a man they had captured 5 miles away with loot from one of the churches, were imprisoned there. Their relatives in the village were allowed to take them food. All the other wings of the monastery were used as a hospital, except where the structure was too ruinous. It had been used as a private school before the war, and Magdalena had never been inside it. When she asked at the door for the director, one of the soldiers told her to go up the stairs. "He's operating," one of them called after her. Her heart sank. Perhaps he wouldn't have time to see her. Then she caught sight of the grand staircase. She'd never seen anything like that. It seemed to be 20 feet wide, and the roof far above her head. On the wall in front of her was a large poster of the Lion of the Spanish Republic. She glanced at the guard. She looked up at the lion. She drew a deep breath and began to climb the stairs. So this is where the monks had lived when she was a girl. But why did they want such a big house? Oh, Mother of Jesus, suppose the director won't see her. She turned to the right at the landing and went up another flight. She passed several men with their arms in splints and slings. She stood still in the middle of the stairs, awed by their noisy laughter. "Come along, Mother, come along. That's the way in." She was in a wide corridor. A man with his leg in plaster sat in a basket chair, and there was the old barber from the village shaving him. Now which way? There were two great doors at the end of the corridor. A wicket in one of them was flung open. More men came through, most of them wearing their pajama jackets in place of shirts. One man, his body bound in plaster and his arm raised in an aeroplane splint, was singing loudly. Some used walking sticks. She passed through the doorway. She saw three doors in front of her and a window to her right, and away on her left a long, wide corridor with doors on either side. Men sat at the window, chatting and calling to girls below in the street. Two men and a woman in white overalls pushed by a table on which lay a man covered with a sheet. "Poor Brachico," she mumbled. A man with one arm was trying to pin notices on a board, and another hobbled up to him and helped him, and they laughed over some joke they were enjoying together. How everyone laughs and sings. She stood a while, and no one took any notice of her. Twice a nurse went by, looking important and busy. "Next time I'll speak to her." She touched the nurse on the arm. The girl stopped. "What is it?" I want to see the director," Magdalena whispered. "Oh, but he's operating." "Oh. What did you want? Can I help you?" My daughter said, "Do you think, can I work here?" "Oh, come along," said the nurse, beckoning with a backward notion that Spaniards use. She conducted her through a nearby door, explained to a man there, and hurried out. A pale young man got up and offered her a chair. He was dressed like an ordinary soldier, with trousers turned under at the ankles and a khaki coat unbuttoned. "I'm the secretary here, and I think I can help you," he said. And to set her at her ease, he told her to sit down and went on talking about the hospital. His voice was low, and he spoke a very fast, cultured Spanish. As in a dream, Magdalena heard him saying, "What kind of work can you do?" To say wash floors sounded absurd in that great building. She hesitated. A vision of those stairs crossed her mind, with the men going up and down and the jocular guards and that lovely picture of the lion. "I could clean the great staircase," she said boldly, and then trembled at her own audacity. "We been," he was telling her the hours and the pay. Oh, mother of God, they'd have her. "Salud, comrade, until tomorrow," he said. She got herself out and down the great staircase. So she washed the great staircase and helped clean the wards. She was never lonely. The soldiers chatted and joked. The guards gave her drinks of their imitation coffee on the quiet. She never tired of looking at the posters on the walls, and she would ask the men what they meant. "What does that one say?" "That says that 14,000 soldiers have learnt to read and write in the last 3 months." "Oh, and this? That's put out by the government too. It says that all adults ought to be able to read and write."